The conference is now being recorded.
Hello. Thanks, Tammy, for that. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rory McIntyre of Winston Capital Partners, and welcome to investors in both the Monash Absolute Investment Company, MA1, and the Monash Absolute Investment Fund. I'm joined by Simon Shields and Shane Fitzgerald, principals and portfolio managers for the fund and the company. Simon will be presenting the presentation that was available as a request on the link with the invite for today. If you do not have this, it is available at the ASX website, code MA1. Simon, welcome.
Thanks, Rory, and thanks for joining us, everybody who's on the line. We're talking about performance of the company, MA1, and also more generally about the performance of the fund on which it's based, the Monash Absolute Investment Fund. So when I talk about the portfolio, I'm really talking about both vehicles. We've been pretty unhappy with the performance of the portfolio this financial year. As you know, the aim is to reliably grow investor wealth, and it's been doing very well up until around October or so this year, and then we started to see it underperform somewhat, and also more particularly have a couple of bad months in November and January. So I'll touch on those. I'll touch on why that happened, and I'm going to go through in this review. We're going to look at what happened in 2016. We're going to look at the key positions in the portfolio, and we're going to look at the changes that we've made in the portfolio and what the outlook is. But I do want to say at this point that while the portfolio hasn't been going so well, it's not because any of the stocks themselves have had significantly disappointing results or blown up in some way. The stocks in the portfolio have actually been doing very well as businesses. We set hurdles very high to buy stocks and to maintain our positions in the stocks, not just as to how the businesses are operating, but also as to what sort of payoffs we're expecting from the businesses. But as you'll see, the market has been against us in the last 4 months or so. It's been quite a difficult time for any exposure to small cap, and particularly a growth exposure to small cap. So without any further ado, I'll start talking about what we look for in the companies and what we've delivered in the portfolio. Okay, so as I said, reliably grow investor wealth. At the same time, we're trying to protect the portfolio from the downside. We do that by being short as well as being long, and we're not necessarily fully invested all the time. We can also do other things like go into pre-IPO stocks. We're stock size agnostic. We're style agnostic. What we do is search for compelling opportunities, and we set the bar high. In particular, we're looking for four key attributes in the stocks. Our insight about the business and how the market doesn't understand that and what that means in terms of earnings and growth for the business going forward in terms of getting the EPS that we need to justify a much higher value. Of course, we're looking for that value as well as that growth. And when we look at value, we're talking about payoff. What is the payoff we're going to get from investing in a stock? And every time we invest in a company, long or short, we set a price target. And there's an investment thesis around that. If that investment thesis is not playing out, we call that a thesis violation, we exit the stock ruthlessly. By the same terms, as the stock price goes up towards our price target, we tend to trim the weighting so that the stock price doesn't get more and more overweight in the portfolio, and we control the risk of the portfolio. We don't want to be blown up by any one stock in the portfolio. And then when it hits our price target, we exit the stock. Likewise, if we can find a vent, all the better. We're now moving on to slide 6, which is with 6 and 7, the performance of the portfolio on a monthly basis. And you can see that most years so far have been good year, but 2016 financial year has been a pretty tough year so far, and that's because of 2 months in particular, the November and the January that's just passed. These months are not unusual. What's unusual is to have a couple of them fairly close together like we have had. But you'll see that we've had months like this in most years, but we've also had months where the portfolio can turn around pretty rapidly. And I hope you'll see as we go through this presentation, we start talking about stocks, that the conditions for a pretty rapid turnaround in the portfolio performance exist still within the portfolio. Just touching on why it's been such a headwind for the portfolio, many people be aware that there has been a switch basically from growth to value. Now, we're style agnostic. We have value stocks in the portfolio as well as growth stocks, but we set the bar very high as to what is value and what is growth. And so our businesses, for the most part, exhibit very strongly growing characteristics as well, even though they've got very high payoffs. And so that's meant as the markets move back towards looking at cyclical value, and you can see that slide from Macquarie Equities on the left-hand side of page 8. As the markets move back towards cyclical value, such as stocks in the resources area, stocks like that have outperformed and gone up very, very strongly and pretty much left the rest of the market behind. And you've seen consistent comments coming out of Vanguard and some other fund managers, which are on that page. Going to slide 9, clearly it's not just a large cap issue, it's a small cap issue, the very strong performance of the resources sector and also to a lesser extent value as opposed to growth. The good news is none of our stocks have had very large disappointments or blown up in any way. I've got a list of stocks on page 10 with their charts. You can see these are some high profile stocks that we did not own that have blown up. There's stocks in the space. As I said, we set the bar very high. We avoided these stocks because we set the bar high not just for the growth but also for the business quality and the outlook. And the portfolio has not been exposed to these. On the other hand, on page 11, you can see some of the stocks that the portfolio has been exposed to, which have caused us some problems. So in the case of Netcom, a stock that intraday got up to a high of $3.60 after it announced the success of its contract with AT&T in the United States, it's now, and it's pretty well halved, around about the $1.70, $1.80 level, without having any particular bad news. Indeed, it's actually announced a very large contract since then with Telstra on fibre to the curb. The business is actually in a stronger position than it's ever been, not just from a capital point of view, because it did have a raising as well, much earlier in the year, but also because it's got a very strong pipeline at the moment. As we understand it, it's got 9 large contracts that are either under trial or in the request for proposal stage. So a much stronger business now than what it was back then when its share price was almost twice as high. Likewise, Catapult, a stock that really has gone from strength to strength as a business. And again, you know, wearable technology for sport, it's the clear leader in the market and it's been delivering good results. And in fact, only this morning, one of the brokers, Morgan CIMB, came out reaffirming its earnings and price expectations and reiterating that they saw more than 80% upside in the share price as it stands. So we're quite confident about Catapult, and we see some very big announcements in Catapult to come to do with league-wide deals over the next 6 months or so. Another stock that has fallen away that been fairly decent exposure for the portfolio is ImpediMed. Medical devices, ImpediMed, for doctors and hospitals that measure inflammation within the body, really very exciting product at, to such an extent that the regulator in the US has put a very high level of reimbursement on this product and has already increased that level of reimbursement in the last year in order to encourage its take-up. And it's currently going through some trials and hospitals are starting to take it up, and so we see a very strong future for that product, particularly its application for heart disease. And also the existing product, which is for lymphedema. But the share price, having got close to $2, is now trading below $1. So without any strong pieces of bad news, this stock has faded away in this rotation away from cyclical growth and small caps to the larger cap stocks. to put that in perspective, now, we don't want any one stock, as I said, to actually overly affect the portfolio. And these stocks are within the portfolio at portfolio weights between about 3% or 5% each. But given a couple of these stocks have halved in value, and Catapult will come back, to a degree as well, collectively these three stocks have probably taken something like 6 or 7% off the portfolio. Now, their current weights within the portfolio are around, 3.5% to 5% or so. And so none of them individually can damage the portfolio too much, but collectively that's hurt us to some extent. And I don't want you to think it's all been bad news, because if you look on the next page, page 12, you can see a couple of stocks that have done very well for us over the past year or so. So stocks like Challenger have been benefiting from demographic change and the very large footprint it has in terms of its distribution for annuities and its large market share in that space, encouraged by the tax office for people to invest in annuities. And likewise, Lovisa. And Lovisa is actually a very good example of a stock that can turn around quickly, because a bit over a year ago, Lovisa fell from $3 to $2. Lovisa is involved in fast fashion jewellery, relatively low-priced fashion. You might have seen them in shopping centres. And it's a great company. Typical payback on the stores is 4 to 8 months when they open them up. About a year ago, it had a bad spring racing carnival in terms of ordering the wrong sort of jewellery for that carnival. As a result, it had to discount it to clear the stock. That impacted on its other products as well. The margins were down, as well as the sales revenue. And the share price fell from about $3 to $2. You can see that over the course of the next year, the share price has redoubled. It's gone back from 2 to 4. So, we do see very significant turnarounds in our stocks as long as we're right about the businesses. And as I said, we've had no stocks in the portfolio that have had any significant business issues in the last little while, and we're very pleased with how they're going. The one stock that I did nominate as a stock where I had been somewhat disappointed over the years has been Yowie, and that's on page 13. And Yowie is a chocolate based on the Yowie character. Inside is a collectible figurine. Used to be sold in Australia 15 years or so ago, had been rolled out by Cadbury. Subsequently, now it's getting rolled out in the United States in an independent listed company known as Yowie. It's been going very well. Walmart's one of their biggest customers. However, the rollout hadn't been going as fast as we expected, or the market, and that's why the stock had come back. There'd also been some corporate governance issues around the stock, as well as execution. Nevertheless, the stock is still growing at, in the last quarter, 44% per annum in terms of its revenue. And indeed, there's been an announcement this week already that they're coming to a new market, the new market being Australia, and that's been received very well. Last time they were in Australia, they sold about 3 units per head per year. And they might not do as well as that this time, but still, they should be getting very significant sales from Australia. You can see at the bottom of that slide, I've got a few different things that should be happening to this company in 2017. That are positives for it. And that is so typical of our companies, that we're not relying on one piece of news or one particular thing to happen for them to work out. And in Yowie's case, there's a number of different things that should be happening to help drive the share price over the course of the next 6 months or a year. And this is a stock where we still have a very, very high conviction level about the payoff we're going to receive for this company, and it is multiples of the current share price. So, before I touch on some of the larger positions in the company to fill out the portfolio a little bit more, I just want to give a bit of perspective on what the portfolio looks like and the sort of risk controls that we have in the portfolio. So if you go to page 14 and page 15, you can see both the fund and the company and the very similar portfolios, because they're following the same strategy. We've got about 21 stocks that we call our outlook-driven stocks. These are stocks that have more than 60% upside to our payoff. We don't hold a very large position in any one of these stocks. You can see we're holding 21 stocks over 72% of the portfolio. So the average is about 3.5% or so per stock. The largest stock's getting up towards about 6% on its own. Likewise, we've got a couple of shorts. These are stocks, the outlook shorts, more than 30% downside to our price target. And we've got some other trades, event trades, group trades, and between those four separate positions, we're looking at about 18% of the portfolio. So there's always a fairly significant amount of cash in the portfolio. We've currently got about 15% cash in the portfolio net. We're not bearish on the market at the moment, as I'll touch on a little bit later. And it's a pretty well-diversified portfolio. We look to protect the portfolio in a number of ways. The first way is that we set the bar high, and every time we go into a stock, we've got a price point that we're looking to exit, and we progressively sell down as we're heading towards that price point. By the same token, we have an investment thesis, and if that thesis is violated, we exit the stock. The second thing we do is we diversify, not just at a stock level and put a limit on how much we can hold in each stock, but also at a sector level and an investment theme level as well. The next thing we do is we look at the overall exposure of the portfolio to the market, and we like to basically use the shorting and the holdings of cash and potentially puts on stocks for the market to keep that exposure under 100%. And that's worked fairly well in the past. It means that we typically have a much lower volatility than the market. On the other hand, we don't want to be shorting the market when the market's rising either, because that detracts value from the portfolio. And so we've limited the shorting around some of those larger stocks, and that's actually worked quite well for us. If you look at the next page, in fact, we touch on a couple more of the things that have been working well for us. If you go back and have a look at the January monthly report that we issued last week, we go into quite a lot of detail about sector rotation in that report and why there's been this headwind to the portfolios. But there've been a couple of bright spots. We haven't been sitting back and just going, it's too tough, what do we do? We've been actively looking for ideas. Now, one idea is we could just be selling the stocks that have been going down. The problem is they're great businesses. They've got, very high payoffs expected from them. And, at one point sooner or later, they're gonna start going up pretty dramatically. So that we don't think is a good idea. The second thing we could do would be, say, loading up on those stocks right now. But neither do we want to catch a falling knife. So we're biding our time, and we're waiting for the market to settle down somewhat. We think this reporting season is going to be very important for us in that regard, in the demonstrating the stocks are fine and creating a level for the stocks. And in fact, we may be already seeing that right now. But the third thing we've been doing is going out and looking at other positions that we can put into the portfolio that are working for us, both long and short. And I've got a couple of the longs here that have worked quite well for us of late. The first is Speedcast on page 16. This is a company that is a telco in the remote and the marine space. All the telcos really have been derated quite a lot. We went into the stock after it did a rather large capital raising and basically bought it on its ding-dong lows. Since that time, it's been delivering. It executed a transaction close sooner than expected. There's no forecast for the synergies in the earnings expectations of the market. This is a company that typically executes things very well, and as a result, it's actually gone up around about $3.50 level today, just in the last couple of months since we bought it. Likewise, we have gone into what we call the resources group. This is a modest exposure for the portfolio, but really what we've seen has been the bottoming of the super cycle and the recovery in resource prices. And these cycles typically take 2 or 3 years to play out. We've only seen the first year of the cycle, so we think there's at least another year to go. And we've bought into a well-diversified portfolio of exposure to commodity prices, and that's been working quite well for us so far. So as I said, I'd go into the portfolio and some of us talk about the stocks. And I just want to cover off on some stocks we haven't touched on yet. And I'll just spend a couple of minutes on the ones we haven't talked to. These 12 or so stocks that you see on page 17 are probably the key stocks of the portfolio. They're the larger outlook positions. They range in weights from about 3% or so up to about 6% or so in order, Emergence being the largest one. And this is an Australian company that is global, that provides transaction cards, they're specialist cards, and it's doing particularly well at the moment in the United States, where it's picking up a lot of large new customers and seems to be continually surprising the market with the size of the business that they're getting from these new customers and the margins that they're delivering. So that's been working very well for us as a business. The share price has come off a little bit. We'll see how they're going this month when they report again. But we're expecting quite a strong outlook statement from that company. G8 is in childcare. It's not exactly a turnaround, but it has had a little bit of management instability, and its rating has been quite low for what is a business that grows quite strongly. You might be seeing lately in the media some of the publicity about how the school fees have been going up with the start of the new school year. Well, childcare is exactly like that as well. And, relatively reliable business, growing strongly on quite a modest multiple. And so we can certainly fit that in as an outlook stock as well. I've touched on Speedcast, touched on Challenger. Greencross is a stock, when it comes to retailers, it's still in its rollout phase. It's still increasing its margins due to scale and private label. It's also got vets that are in-house. You might be aware that Greencross is the business that owns Pet Barn. So they're retailing food for pets. A large part of that is the dog food, but there's lots of other things as well that goes associated with that, including veterinary services. And so that's a bolt-on within each store as well. So they get good margins from the store, they're getting a rollout, they're getting maturing of the stores, they're getting the private label going in. So we're seeing that grow at faster than the average rate for the retailers, yet its PE is still underplaying that. In fact, there's been a lot of corporate takeover activity in the United States recently in this space. So it continues to be a high-quality business that we think is wrongly priced. Lovisa, we've touched on already. Silver Chef is really a rent-try-buy business for small and medium enterprises, where it focuses on business-critical equipment. So in the case of hospitality, for example, the ovens, the fridges, the coffee machines, business critical equipment that has a deep secondary market. And wherever it's gone, whenever it's expanded, it's grown very quickly. So it expanded very quickly in Australia, went to New Zealand, it's now in the process of rolling out in Canada. It's a great business. It hasn't disappointed, except to the extent recently that it had a fraud against it. But that was clearly a one-off, and that's been dealt with. And in the scheme of things, it was actually quite a small amount of money in any case. Netcom, we touched on as the telco hardware for not just the NBN and AT&T, but basically any telco around the world. And it's really benefiting from the switch as they move from 3G to 4G to 5G, from broadband to wireless, and really for those pinch points in telcos where they have problems, hence its ability to help out with fibre to the curb. Catapult, I think we've touched on already, sports technology, wearable technology for elite and professional athletes. Largest market share of any of these companies. In fact, Daylight to second continues to grow its business very considerably, put on an extra 28% versus PCP in the last quarter in terms of the units that it sold. And we've got some big announcements in the pipeline from Catapult as it continues to do league-wide deals. NextDC is a company that, in fact, we exited at probably about a year ago after getting a pretty good return out of it the first time. However, the share price has since come back, and we've used it as a re-entrant opportunity. NextDC is in data centers. It has a national footprint of data centers in Australia. That's all this content that people are creating on their mobile phones that needs to be stored in the cloud or accessed through their pay TV or websites such as Google and Amazon. That goes through the NextDC data centers, and they're a beneficiary of that. Yowie we've touched on. And then lastly, Paragon Care, which is a supplier to aged care and hospitals, equipment such as beds, cabinets, trolleys, some consumables, and that's got quite a fast-growing like-for-like business that they're also adding bolt-on acquisitions, which leverages up that like-for-like, as well as providing a new, if you like, source of customer base for them as they roll out their platform. So we'll be getting to questions shortly. I'll just wrap up now on page 18. The first point is pretty positive about the world. The world's growing. In fact, the world has generally been surprising over the course of the year, how it's been growing. Notwithstanding that, there is more stimulus on the way, right? And there's quite a head of stimulus built up behind, which takes time to flow through. So the central banks have been quite supportive for some time, and now we're finding that the US is likely going to cut interest rates. It's likely going to be increasing infrastructure spending at a time when the US already has relatively full employment. And that's going to be putting pressure on other countries to also drop their tax rates as well, as you can see from the commentary that's going on in Australia. Having said that, there's no euphoria about people. You know, it's not a 1987 or a pre-GFC sort of situation with the share prices just going up and up and up and taxi drivers talking about it. Likewise, plenty of people out there with still high cash levels. So the summary is it's a glass half full situation. The outlook for the portfolio remains strong. You know, we only invest in businesses that we think are cracking businesses as long as we remain thinking they're cracking businesses. As I said, we set the bar high. What's happened now that those share prices have come back without any business deterioration, the stocks are just available at better prices, even though we thought there was quite a lot of upside before. Now, what we're seeing in the market is something that happens from time to time. As I said, it's unusual to get two bad months so close together. But the market goes through cycles where it moves from one sort of stock to another. And for a few years, the market really had those big large cap stocks on the nose, the banks, the resources, some of those larger slow growth industrials. And they were quite scared of, you know, that they were bad investments. In a sense, investing in some of these small cap stocks was the only game in town. With the Brexit behind us, with the election of Donald Trump behind us, and with a view that growth is actually improving, all of a sudden the market's not quite so scared about investing in some of these larger cap stocks. And that money that had been going into the smaller cap growth stocks, I think, has now moved across into some of these larger cap stocks. We've seen that with a couple of portfolio transitions. One of the large Australian super funds recently took $1 billion out of small cap, for example. We don't rest on our laurels, even though, you know, we've done a lot of work on these companies. The fact that these companies have fallen, as they have in share price, really worries me and makes me think, what have we missed? We've done a lot of work. We've gone and spoken to, you know, all these companies, not just them, competitors, suppliers, regulators, if applicable, to try and work out if we've missed something and that if it's important. And the companies in the portfolio pretty much have stood up. Now, I often say all we've got to do is get 80% of our stocks right. Well, in fact, as businesses, we're getting a lot more than 80% right. What's unfortunately happening is the stocks are going the other way on us. One of the other things we look at to see perhaps if we've missed some things, we look at the level of shorting in our companies. And there was a period a couple of months ago where in a couple of these stocks, the level of shorting did go up, but it's since plateaued. There is, again, we're very happy with the companies we're invested in, and we don't see anybody else taking a strong contra view to us or increasing that bet size, at least, at the moment. As I mentioned before, our response is not just to go out and catch falling knives, right? We remain disciplined. Originally, we sold into strength. If we hadn't have been selling into strength, you know, the portfolio would have done worse than what it ended up doing. Where we are now, we're in a position where we can buy back some of these stocks at great prices, We just want to make sure, particularly with this reporting season, that everything's okay, and we really do think they'll be finding a base. Having said that, it is impossible to forecast when and if a rotation from one sector to another will play out. But it looks to me like by far the worst has happened now. We are always looking to make money for the portfolio. As I said, size agnostic, style agnostic. More recently, we've gotten more larger cap stocks in the portfolio. We've still been avoiding the shorting because, as I said, glass half full, it looks like the market's probably wanting to go up still. We're not wedded to any stock. We will cut if things don't work out for us in terms of the business. And generally, we are actually very, very excited about the stocks in the portfolio. I've been going now for about half an hour. Hopefully, we've got plenty of questions. So I'm going to hand it back over now to the operator to introduce the questions.
Thank you, and good afternoon. This is Tanny from Express Virtual Meetings to conduct your question and answer session. Guests are invited to ask questions by pressing star one on your telephone keypad now. To ask a question, you need to press star one on your telephone keypad now. You will be placed in a queue. Please listen for your name and I will introduce you through to the call. Simon and Rory, I'll be with you in a moment with any questions. We had our first question, gentlemen, and it is with Rob Lurie. Please go ahead, Rob.
Hi, Simon. A question on Yowie. You mentioned some corporate governance issues and seem to gloss over that. Can you go over that in more detail for me and whether you think it's something that is actually worthy of a more detailed review?
Certainly, Rob. Hi, and thanks for your question on Yowie. Yeah, look, the corporate governance issue on Yowie arises from the fact that it's only got a three-person board.
Right, okay.
One of them is an independent director. One of them is the executive chairman, who's in an executive position, and the other is also another executive director who's there on a part-time basis. I suppose what our concern is that the full skill set of the board needs to be improved, and it's too small. Right? So I think this is a fairly consistent feedback that the Yowie business has been getting over the course of a year, and I think the drumbeats are getting a bit louder, actually, for the company. At the same time, and probably perhaps the cause of the drumbeats getting louder, is they haven't executed well. In the last quarter, there was a problem with manufacturing and that caused a problem with distribution. And even though it grew its sales by 44% versus the previous corresponding period, it probably should have done 10 or 15% better than that. They have been putting in new management, but that's not at the board level, that's below board level. And, you know, some very impressive people now with the company. And we really think it's time for, you know, the directors to sort of step back a little bit and let the management, you know, kick on with it. So that's basically the governance issues that's facing Gary at the moment. It's I think, well known in the market. I think that's one of the things that's weighing on the share price. But my expectation is, you know, that'll get sorted out sooner or later. The underlying growth of the business is very strong. I highlighted those three things that should happen this year. They will all be incremental to the existing growth of the business. And, it's really a very profitable business. So we're looking forward to seeing how that plays out.
Thanks, Simon.
Thank you so much, Rob. Our next question is from Tom Dorr. Tom, please go ahead.
Yeah, Rory and Simon, sorry, I missed the first part of your presentation, so apologies if you've already answered the question. With the companies that you hold on a long basis, what are your expectations earnings growth wise in the pending reporting season?
Okay, so really all the companies we're owning for the most part, except even the value companies, are all exhibiting quite strong top line growth and cash flow. Very. Now, companies like, say, Catapult are only just through profitability. And in fact, they're investing to accelerate their rollout. So it's really a matter of how fast the revenue is growing rather than how fast the profitability is growing. But they're all very strong. So, the minimum would be somewhere around, say, 15% in terms of earnings or revenue through to, upwards of 60%+ in terms of underlying cash flow growth for these businesses. They are all cracking businesses in the portfolio. All the ones I've touched on, as you can, we've all got multiple drivers in them. What's tough, of course, is predicting the future. So we look for as many drivers or if you like, levers which we can get our hands on in order to work out what's going on. And even then, we go, as long as we can just get 80% of these right, then, the portfolio should work out because we've got quite a spread of stocks in the portfolio. Now, we've been getting the businesses right, but the stock prices in the last 3 or 4 months have just not been going our way. So I'm looking forward to seeing the traction in this reporting season, seeing the outlook statements in particular, because they are so important for the companies. It's not even a matter of whether or not the stocks hit the expected earnings or revenues, because typically the analysts are pretty good going into reporting season. They've gone back, they've talked to the companies, they sort of trim up or trim down their expected results to make sure that they're not going to be too far out from reality. But it's that guidance that the company gives about the remainder of the year and the year after that that really will end up driving our share prices. Now, we look at all our stocks and we're in businesses that, typically surprise on the upside. And like I said, we've even had this month already, we've had an announcement from Yowie that's been a positive. Last month, we had two announcements from eMerchants. They acquired a new large customer in Canada. They got quite a large customer in McMillan Shakespeare in Australia, the largest remuneration packaging customer. It's about 10% accretive to their earnings. So, we're hopeful going into reporting season that we're just going to be seeing the sort of results that we typically get.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your question, Tom. Our next question is from Chan Nguyen. Please go ahead, Chan.
Hi Simon, it's Chan from Affinity Wealth. I just wanted to know a bit more about the sector rotation and what indicators you use and how would you approach that going forward next time there's a rotation out of small caps. Thanks.
Hi Chan, good to hear from you. Yeah, it's a good question. We're not very top down. We are very bottom up. All right. So, what we do is we get into the companies, we work out what's going on, we set our expectations about how it's going to play out over the next few years. We do a very detailed analysis. The company takes its balance sheet into account, its CapEx requirements, its debt levels, and we forecast what we think this thing should be worth. We take a discount off that, and that's our price target. So what we don't do a lot of is this sort of top-down forecasting, top-down of commodities, top-down of currencies, top-down of interest rates. So I find there are many fewer levers for that, and you're competing with many more people. So, and sector rotation's a bit like that too. It's really those benchmark relative people that are really sort of got their fingers close to the pulse on sector rotation because they're not taking very big bets around the index, and so they're very attuned to sector rotation. For us, it's really how the companies go that's going to be the driver. So as bad as the last few months have been, dropping, 4% 1 month and 5% another month, we're really after making much bigger amounts of money out of the stocks. And so a sector rotation where we miss out on 10 or 12%, you know, in large cap versus small cap. It's painful at the time, but that's not where the money is for us. The money is in the stocks like the Netcoms, the Emergents, the Catapults, the ImpediMeds, the Yowies, the Lavissas. You know, stocks that go up 50, 80, 100, 150, 200%. You know, we've made that sort of money in the stocks in the portfolio before. We will continue to make those that sort of money in the future. What we don't do is we don't bet farm on anyone. And so that's why, you know, we get these sort of more moderate constrained outcomes, but still generally have very good years on average going forward. So, you know, the question was, what are we going to look out for in the future, though? Why? What are we going to be more sensitive about? Well, clearly, we're going to be a lot more sensitive about some things now going forward. The risk is that, you know, next time we fight the battle that we should have fought previously, and it's not the battle that we should be fighting. So, you know, I suppose the sign that things were getting stretched was the fact that people really saw banks and resources and other large cap stocks on the nose, and they'd seen them on the nose for a very long time. Now, that doesn't help us with turning points. That just basically says to us, you know, there's a bias in the market away from those large cap stocks, and we should be aware that at some point that bias is going to end. But it doesn't really help us with the timing of that. Likewise, in particular with the resources, we saw commodity prices drop a long way. And some stocks almost went bankrupt. There were a lot of large capital raisings, and there were a lot of near-death experiences for the stocks. But, you know, that dragged on, and it was very hard to pick the bottom of that. So it's really about trying to be sensitive for turning points, right? So to answer your question is, the turning point that we're looking for now is, when will this rotation come to an end? Has it come to an end? When is it safe to go back and buy a bit more of these companies that are just so cheap? Because it's not just that they're, overshot, right? It's not just that they're shit cheap and they've overshot. It's that they're massively overshot for some of these companies. The thing is, we could have called that when the share prices were 20% higher, right? So the question is, at what point do we go? And we're looking for signs. We're very attuned to that. The fact that the shorting has stopped now, like I said, we looked back a couple of months ago, there was shorting going on. That sort of stopped now in terms of the increase in shorting. That, I think, is the first sign. The second sign is that the market's been relatively strong over the last 3 or 4 months or so. And you might call that a paradox, given that the small cap growthy stocks have underperformed. But looking at that, that's actually quite typical of a bull market, in that the stocks that tend to perform first in a bull market are the safer stocks. People have been avoiding the market, and as they come and tip their toe back in the water and they come back into the market, they go with the lower risk stocks first. Then, as the market continues to improve, there is a movement from the lower risk stocks to the higher risk, from the large cap to the smaller. So at some point, we're going to see quite the wind's going to be at our back in terms of, the sort of stocks that are currently in the portfolio predominantly. Now, we've not only got small cap stocks in the portfolio, in the same way that we don't only have growth stocks in the portfolio, but that's the predominant flavour of the portfolio, because we're just seeing so much upside from those stocks at the moment. Did I cover that, Chan?
Yeah. Great. Yeah. Thanks, Simon. We did have a second question. Okay. Yeah. Sure. It's around the NTA, and I suppose what most LICs or many trade at a discount to their NTA. Mm-hmm. How likely is it for us to exercise our options in September?
Yeah. Well, look. The funnily enough, the actual stock was pretty close to the NTA for the most of last month. And it's only really the last few days that it's dropped precipitously. I suppose when we saw the NTA fell 4% at the end of last month, that the share price reacted to that. Really, for us to for a unit holder to want to, or shareholder to want to exercise the option in September, you're going to want to see that NTA go back over a dollar. Now, you know, as of the end of January, it was about 90 cents. So we just need to get it up about 10% to get to that dollar. And like I said, if you have a look at the month-on-month history in the presentation, we do have months where it's gone up 8% before, 7-8% in a month alone. It doesn't take much, you know, to have quite a good bounce back. You can see Lovisa, for example, doubled in price over the course of a year. So these stocks are being held in the portfolio. It weights, as I said, between 3 and 5%. We start to see some of these stocks go up by 20, 25%, which is entirely realistic over the course of several months if they deliver. Then, you know, we'll get the portfolio well and truly back in the money.
Right, sure. So in terms of your volatility, you've got companies like Catapult that's done, you know, well, and there are other companies that have gone the other way. But yep. What would be like the average sort of beta for your portfolio if we were to use that as a benchmark?
Yeah, okay. So the average beta of the portfolio has been 60 since inception, if you go back to when the fund started.
Yeah.
In periods, it's looked like it's been in the low 40s. At other times, it's looked like it's been in the low 80s. To some extent, that is basically just the outcome of statistics of doing a beta that's based on daily price moves over the course of rolling 12 months. And sometimes that can sort of, depending on what's been going on in the market, it can make the stocks look less volatile than they are, or it can make them look more volatile than they are. At the moment, our beta is sitting around about the 0.8 to 0.83 level. So it looks like it's higher than usual, but in fact, it's my feel for it is it's still really around that 0.6 if you look at the underlying level of the beta. In terms of the overall volatility of the portfolio, our portfolio is typically less volatile than the market. It tends to go down less than the market on a month-by-month and a day-by-day basis. That's not always the case, but that's what it tends to do, and it tends to do that because we're not fully exposed to the market. We have cash levels that might be between 15 or 30 or 40%, but also our stocks typically move to the beat of their own drum. And one of the things we've often said is we don't want stocks that just go up and down with the market. Having said that, clearly, if the market's going up, you want to go up with the market, right? But we don't want stocks that just go up and down with the market. We've got stocks that are driven by the things that are going on in their businesses. It just so happens, unfortunately, that the market doesn't really care about that at the moment. It's got other priorities. But I think, you know, it's these reporting seasons that are so important where our stocks can demonstrate why, you know, they're great investments. And hopefully, you know, the next 3 to 6 months, we'll see that play out in share prices.
Okay, great. Thanks, Simon.
Thanks, Jan.
Thank you very much for your question, Chan. We have one more question, and it is from Ian Herod. Ian, please go ahead.
Thanks very much. Simon, just in the last week, I mean, the share price of your company has fallen, by the looks of it, by 12%. That's a heck of a movement in such a short time. What do you put that down to?
Yeah, I agree. It is because, you know, as you know, the thing only moved, the NTA only moved 4% in the preceding month. So basically the stock price had been trading pretty much in line with the NTA. I think the disclosure came out about the portfolio being down 4% for the month. And to my mind, that's what precipitated the move. You know, we've got a market cap in the company that's a bit under $50 million. It means that it's not as liquid as a big LIC that might have, you know, $400 or $500 million, let alone $1 billion in it. And so, you know, buyers and sellers can move the share price around away from the NTA, and I think that's what we've seen in the last week.
Even with small volumes, I presume.
But, you know, it might be a small volume that they're trying to move as a seller, but if the buyer's not there and they're inclined to sell anyway, then they can push the share price down quite a bit. And I think that's what's happened. I mean, I look at the spread and, you know, the spread this morning was quite wide. It's closed up a little bit since then. I looked at it about an hour ago. But, you know, that's quite indicative of what happens when somebody comes in and just decides they're either buying or they're selling and they just push it through.
Okay. Listen, just another quick one without notice. I presume there are no unlisted stocks in the portfolio?
Yeah, we do have a few. It is actually part of our, as a feature of the fund, that we have what we have pre-IPO stocks in the portfolio. So about 2.5 to 3% of the portfolio is unlisted. A couple of these are coming through in the next few months as listings. We think they're great businesses, and we think that they're going to list at a premium to what we paid for them. Usually we get a discount of about 25% versus the IPO price on these stocks. Now, we've got about half a dozen of these stocks in the portfolio. It's about 0.5% weight in each of them or so at the moment. And we've got, and the stocks that aren't being listed this year, we expect to get listed over the next year.
Okay, very good.
Thank you very
Thank
much
you.
For your question, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
That's all the questions that we have.
Well, thanks a lot for that. I just want to reiterate that, I'm as unhappy as everybody else that we've had a weak financial year so far. But I'm sort of, my one saving grace is we haven't been in stocks that have blown up badly. We've been in stocks that have been derated, but really have been performing as businesses as we'd expect. They're strong businesses. We expect to see further evidence of them being strong businesses this reporting season. And as a result, and consistent with the experience that I've had over the last 25, 30 years, I just think this is just one of these unfortunate short periods we get in the market from time to time, and we just will work through it, and we'll get very good returns sooner or later coming out of the portfolio. So with that, I'd like to thank you all for listening in. And for those that ask questions.
Yeah, and if you have any other follow-up queries, either come back to myself or under Fairweather. Our contact details are at the end of the presentation, and I'm very happy to do as many follow-ups as required. And again, thank you for your ongoing support.
Good afternoon.
Period of time,
yeah,
which makes sense for the process, but at the moment they're all fairly jammed.
Keep going if you can.
Well, that's right. So for me, if I do them by the end of the year, that means I've done all of the centres in 2 years. But I guess in principle, the centres should be done over a 3-year period, and it would be a luxury to have more time to spend with each centre's report. There's no question about that.
Yeah, yeah.
To have a deeper focus on each centre, I think, to do 17 centres last year, there you can only do it to a certain degree.